presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of
Comic Dorks.
Thrilling adventure, intense excitement, pounding action, and spine-tingling mystery.
Welcome back to Comic Dorks. This is Comic Dorks, episode 21, and it is Wednesday, September 10th, 2014. My name is Scott Johnson, joined today by Scott Kurtz.
Hello.
Hello. Also, Steven Schleicher.
Hey there.
And the one and only, Mark Spagnola.
Hello.
Hey, man.
What's up?
Good to have everybody here. Comics, you know, stuff.
The good stuff.
We're a day behind. We apologize. My fault. I had things. And
I have a Spagnola question.
Oh, go.
Let's do it.
Kim Price over at Doghouse is always talking about someone she podcasts with that's also a Spagnola.
Yeah.
Yes.
Related?
By marriage, yes.
Nice. Yeah. I wondered.
That's
okay.
Nicole. Nicole's awesome. If you haven't had a chance to meet Nicole, she's pretty rad. She does some stuff on my morning show. She's does that show. She has a video game podcast called Ladies of Leet, which she does. That's the one she does with Kim.
Right.
She does.
Nerd Parents as well.
Which she's recording now.
Yep.
You guys have awesome bandwidth. Nice job.
I hope so.
At
we'll
least
see.
We hope so. And other stuff. Oh, yeah. Final Scores, another show she does with me. And we'll do that this afternoon. So, yeah, she's awesome.
She's busy.
The Spags are rad. Let's put it that way.
Try to be.
Yeah. It's good to have everybody back. We're going to dig deep into what the hell happened between last time we were here and now. And we'll start with this.
Wait a minute. Don't leave me here alone. I'll talk. I'll tell you everything I know.
Steven, why does Robert Downey Jr. not want to be in Iron Man 4?
I don't think he doesn't not want to be in Iron Man 4. I think that there are legal and contract things that basically he's saying, I'm not going to be in Iron Man 4. He's not saying that there's not going to be an Iron Man 4. He's just saying, I won't be in it. And a lot of things, we've talked about this before, and Scott Kurtz brought it up before, that the typecasting aspect issue when it comes to actors and the movies that they're in could mean lots and lots of money that needs to be paid out to Robert Downey Jr. Of course, he spilled the beans. I forget how much he was making per movie, $20, $50 million, something like that, as Iron Man, and that leaked out, and Disney and Marvel weren't happy about that, and Marvel is notoriously one who doesn't want to pay a lot of money. And so he says, if there's an Iron Man 4 movie, that's great. I'm not going to be in it, or there's no plans for me to be in it.
Scott, didn't you say once that had something to do, we talked about SAG rules or something, about three movies and you're out?
Corey, my business manager, you know, he had a previous life trying to break in as an actor in L.A. He was on TV shows and stuff. In fact, if you look hard enough on YouTube, you can find him on The Sweet Life of Zach and Cody.
Nice.
But anyway, yeah, after – there are SAG rules that after three movies, you have to renegotiate the contract because a person could get typecast and then that could affect their income moving forward. So there's a good chance that that's a part of it, right? Like for there to be an Iron Man 4 – the rules suddenly change about payment and stuff. And yeah, Marvel's pretty tight. Didn't Downey have to fight to get all the Avengers raises?
Yes, he did.
So,
I feel like they shouldn't have had to fight so hard for that. That should have been pretty obvious that first movie just did real well. And there's no reason why they shouldn't have been able to negotiate higher. I know it's a big ensemble and I know that's hard. I'm sure if he fought for everybody else, I doubt that included him. Like he was probably willing to take a bit of a hit. Because Steven, you were telling me the other day it was getting upwards to what, 40 or 50 million?
I want to say it's like $50 million is what he was contracted for in the last movie. And that's what he had. I think that was in a GQ article that he blurted that out. And of course, then we know that in the past when actors have gone to Marvel Studios and said, hey, man, I'd like to have more money to play Rhodey, then suddenly there's Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Well, they're
suddenly there's Don Cheadle.
They're you know, Marvel's a corporation, Disney's a corporation. They're not people, and they're going to always go for the bottom.
Oh yeah.
But I think there could be creative reasons too why Downey doesn't want to do an Iron Man 4.
Sure,
I think most actors never say never, but I think that Iron Man 3 creatively wasn't that awesome.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It was a chance to work with Shane Black, who he worked with in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And, mm-hmm. and you know, Shane is like the quintessential 80s movie guy. And I think that Marvel also, they tend to look at their movies like, this is a part of the Marvel universe, but it's also a 1970s political thriller like The Winter Soldier, or it's, kind of a 'Winter Soldier' like a 70s political thriller.
Sure.
Guardians of the Galaxy was like a 1980s space drama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So, yeah, it's the Marvel universe, but every single movie is kind of its own thing. And, you know, I'm sure Ant-Man will have some humorous aspects to it. I know they're talking about how Doctor Strange is going to feel more like a supernatural horror, maybe.
Oh, weird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, it's one of those things where, they're pretty creative about who they hire. I lost track of what I was going to say. Anyway, the point is, there may not be a lot of places creatively for these guys to go.
Hmm. It's possible. Mark, how do you feel about the idea of rebooting, though? Like, let's say I came to you and said, dear Iron Man fan who would like to see more movies, there's been three of these. What we're going to do is in this Avengers movie, we're going to kill off Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. That Tony Stark is going to die and in the story, meaning. And that hasn't happened in the comics, or maybe it has, but this is how we're going to do it in the movies. And his protege, Jr., whatever his name is going to don the suit, and now that guy gets three movies. How does that land on you if you were, like, you know, just someone who wanted to see the movie?
I think it's fine. I think what's interesting about this is to see, because there's other properties that are going to be coming up on this, I guess, magic 3 movie number.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with it, because the way Marvel's been going with these movies, it's been so good, but we haven't gotten to that point where either it's a reboot or a recasting. What's going to happen at that point? What makes these things so successful are the personalities that are brought and the faces that are brought to the property. So I don't really want to prejudge it, because who knows? Marvel's done amazing things that I never expected them to do. I'm curious to see what they do with it.
Yeah. Well, and keep in mind, too, a lot of this stuff is negotiated. I mean, Samuel Jackson signed a 9-picture deal way back when, after the first Iron Man movie, to be in all these different properties. So, yeah. You know, that was something that was negotiated way, way, way far out in advance. And Chris Evans
has... Sebastian Shaw, too?
Yeah, he did a 9-picture deal as well. And Chris Evans has expressed interest that he wasn't interested in doing any more Captain America movies. Now he's expressed this last week, said, yes, I would be interested in doing more Captain America. It just depends on who's willing to do it. And I can understand from an actor standpoint. We were talking earlier about day jobs and how the monotony and the grind of doing the same thing over and over again can get to you. And for an actor, if you're playing the same role year after year after year, you don't get a chance to express yourself and grow as an actor.
Sure.
So that could be part of it as well.
Sure. And you also don't want to, I mean, the typecast thing is real, but I've always found the typecasting thing seems to only apply to the actors who are easily typecast. In other words, Shatner never really pulled out of Shatner because he really didn't have range outside of Shatner. So no offense, he's Captain Kirk. He's a badass. I love him. But you weren't going to get him to do a bunch of diverse roles, but you could get Patrick Stewart to, because the guy's got range and he can do things that aren't Picard-like, but Riker had a real hard time with that, so he directed instead. So, by the way, I just saw an episode of Dukes of Hazzard that has Riker in it. He's Boss Hogg's nephew. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Crazy.
It's really good. It's only like 6 years before Star Trek, too, which is weird. But anyway.
So, Downey just finished making a movie with Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed him, and someone was asking him about Iron Man, and that's where he said, the most recently, like, I don't think I'll do another one. And Duvall's like, don't give it to anybody else. Don't give Iron Man to anybody else. So yeah. From the perspective of an older actor.
Sure. And he's not the only one, wasn't it? Yesterday, Al Pacino was talking about how he would give his left foot to be in a Marvel movie now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he gave up. He says he regrets giving up the role of Han Solo. He auditioned for that and turned it down. And I actually probably would have made a really good Han Solo, to be honest. I don't know. But the point is that at the time he thought, well, I don't want to be in some kid's space adventure. But things have turned. Tables have turned, including Star Wars. I mean, Harrison Ford, his whole career is, you know, you could call that the launching pad, even though there are other things before it. And he's been able to be diverse and break out there. Mark Hamill, not so much. But I guess what I'm saying is, if Chris Evans or Robert Downey Jr. are worried, they probably shouldn't be. They've shown themselves to be versatile and do lots of other things. Scarlett Johansson's just fine. Like, I don't know who gets typecast here. Yeah, especially Downey. He's amazing. But there's nobody else. I can't think of anybody else. Maybe Chris Evans. Or not Chris Evans. Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
He's doing so much.
He's doing a lot, but it's all one note. Like, I'm not getting a lot of... I guess what I'm saying is, people usually tire of the no range. And there's just not a lot of range there. I've only seen maybe three movies with him in outside of Thor. But they all sound the same, seem the same. His affectations are pretty close to the same. And, you know, again, no knocking him. He's a great Thor. He's the best Thor we could ask for. He's not even the Thor we wanted. He's the one we needed, whatever. But I just feel like in the long haul, most of these actors are going to be just fine. So this weird arbitrary rule of typecast fearing is strange to me, because it should be case by case. You know, Shatner, you should be afraid. Patrick Stewart, not so much. I don't know. It's a weird call. But there will be new Iron Men, whether they're Robert Downey Jr. after Avengers or somebody else. I actually do subscribe to this idea that Tony Stark dies or disappears or leaves, you know, goes underground or whatever, and somebody else is now Iron Man.
We talked about it on the morning stream. I'd rather them just pull a James Bond. Just plop Mark Spagnuolo in the Iron Man suit. Sweet. And just move on and tell the story.
I totally agree.
Interested. Would not work. You're wrong.
You don't think?
No, Iron Man does not work without Downey Jr. I'm sorry.
You don't think so?
No, and that's why the third movie sucked so bad, because maybe it was the point of it, but the point of Iron Man 3 was that he's Iron Man. The suit's not. Which is a weird message in a movie where anyone can be Iron Man, literally. I mean, the most you see of Iron Man in that movie is suits being remote controlled.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, how many people in that movie were Iron Man?
Hardly even Iron Man himself.
Hardly. Tony was the least Iron Man in that movie.
The Iron Man.
Right?
Yeah. His girlfriend was more Iron Man.
His girlfriend was Iron Man. Cheadle was War Machine.
Yeah.
The bad guy was War Machine.
Yeah, that was a weird choice.
And then he remote controlled Iron Man for the plane scene. Spoiler, sorry. Mm-hmm. Should have seen it by now.
Yeah.
And then, what's the other one? Oh, yeah. Every other Iron Man in existence just kind of was run by Jarvis on its own. Yeah. Did not even need a person.
It was a little bit weird. Here's the thing, though. You could find another snarky mustache dude. And like, a pick for me would be actually the guy that played his dad in the first Captain America, Stark Sr. And he's in that great movie where he's playing a double of one of the Hussein boys in the, I can't remember the name of that, Devil's Own, I think it's called. Anyway.
The guy that played Stark? He's going to be in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
That guy. Yeah. He'd make a great.
He's pretty good.
I guess what I'm saying is, we do this with all our heroes. How many Batmen have we had? They've all made money.
And the James Bond example is perfect. Think about the first James Bond has to really establish who this character is. He's very suave, he's very slick, but he's, you know, athletic at the same time and very smart. What that actor brought to it was very specific. And then, you know, 10 actors after that brought the same thing successfully. I think Tony Stark is that kind of personality.
I think so. It just needs to be timed out. Like, you can't just roll into 4 and have it not be Downey Jr. a year after Downey Jr. was in the Avengers. You know, like that kind of stuff. Maybe we need time, like we do normally. Like, we've had some time between Christian Bale and what's his bucket? Freaking Affleck. And that's, you need a little bit of time. I just don't know how she'd do it. Like, I'm with you, Scott, in that it's not great, but I don't know what else there is. These guys age out of the roles, or the movies themselves start to.
Well, you just have someone else
returns.
Be Iron Man.
Yeah. It was great in Her Majesty's Secret Service where, God dang it, I forgot his name, but he has this fight scene. Yeah, Lazenby has this fight in the ocean, and then he looks at the camera and says, "Well, this never happened to the other guy." And then, and then right into the story. So,
yeah, I forgot they kind of had that nod in there, didn't they? Yeah. It's a little weird to do.
That poor guy.
By the way, you want to see something weird? Watch the James. What's the one with Jaws where they're up in the Moonraker. In Brazil? Is it Moonraker?
Mm-hmm.
They have full on slapstick with like sound effects.
Oh yeah,
in that movie.
Yeah.
It's shit.
Yeah. Some of the Roger Moore stuff just got
all shit.
Too crappy.
It's all pretty shitty.
They're all shit. Yeah. That's the funny thing. I sat down and went, you know what? I'm going to pay attention this time. I'm going to pay attention to the plot. You can't.
Now, are you lump the Daniel Craig bits in there? You think those are just different sensibilities and looks?
I think the Daniel Craig stuff is better. I like it better, but again, it's also, I don't know how much of that is traditional James. Like, I mean, Casino Royale was probably more James Bond than any other James Bond movie if you go by the books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there was no gadgets. There was no, you know.
Yeah, it was straight up spy stuff.
It was just a straight up kind of spy thriller.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which
I love
that
movie.
I preferred, yeah. I liked it. I don't know, as a kid, though, you couldn't pull me away from Moonraker and Live and Let Die and all that stuff.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It was great. I mean, and when he saw Q and Q would pop out with a pen that shot some arrow through a dude's head, you'd freaking, oh, this is the best thing ever. I'm just starting to realize how little these sometimes movies are made for me. I watched Hook again because we're doing the whole Robin Williams thing. And so many people just consider that one of the most beloved films of their childhood. And that's the difference. I was 20. They were 7 and 8. And of course it was the most amazing thing they'd seen. And of course they have fond feelings for it because I was 20. I wasn't interested in those things anymore. And it came off wrong, and it still did when I watched it again. And my kids, depending on what age they were, my oldest thought, she's 20 now. My 17-year-old was like, it's all right. And my youngest thought it was kind of cool, who's 14. And I think that's how this stuff works. That James Bond stuff worked for us because we were kids, and now it's pretty stupid.
Is a Disney movie called Condor Man.
I love Condor Man, dude.
It is an awesome fucking movie, but there is ostensibly no difference between Condor Man and any 70s or 80s Bond film.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's no way it holds up. In fact, I'm afraid to go near it because when I was a kid.
Condor Man?
Yes.
Watch it again.
I wore it out on VHS when I was a kid.
Watch it again.
All right.
It's worth it.
You'll
fast forward just like a Bond film. I was thinking about this because I watched The Bourne Legacy.
Yeah.
I figured I like Renner. I'll watch The Bourne Legacy. Right.
I liked Bourne Legacy. I'm going to be. I can tell you're not a fan already.
But didn't you just kind of go, all right, I'm done with the chase scene. Like, they're going to get away and there's going to be a lot of near misses. Like, what are the point of these? Do we really need these?
There was a bit of that. I mean, all the Bourne movies are like that, though. They're like, I guess you have a point.
Chase scene.
You get to the third or fourth one, you're like, all right, you know, rinse and repeat. I get it. But as far as, I don't know. I am a sucker for the way Bourne did things. And I didn't need to be Jason Bourne for me to enjoy that. So I think I probably liked it more than most. I mean, a lot of people were just like, well, it's not what's his name, so I'm not watching it.
Oh, I thought he was better than Damon.
Yeah, I liked him in it. He was great.
Yep.
I also like that. Who's the girl? Anyway.
Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, she's hot.
Wife of James Bond.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Full circle.
Look at us. Next topic. All right. I'm going to give you a quick report on the Salt Lake City Comic Con.
Okay.
Which I attended and boothed at. Sold prints with my daughter. We did a little daddy-daughter combo deal. And did pretty well. It ended up being, and I think you'll have the real numbers over there, Stephen, I think.
I don't. I know on Saturday they said 90,000 for sure showed up. They sold 120,000 tickets, but we don't have an official attendance on anything.
What was funny is at the show floor, Thursday was so crazy with the lines. They just hadn't got a handle on it. And then they kind of did by Friday. It was much easier, but lots more people. And then Saturday was a freaking madhouse. And they had constantly shutting and opening and shutting and opening with the fire marshals because we were, you know, too many people. I had to wait for people to leave. Some that day were saying that there were 200,000 bodies in and out of that place in those days. I thought that seemed a little high, and now the numbers have settled to about 130, like you're saying. So people are saying 130,000 came and went, and it felt like that. That felt about right. It was bananas. If those numbers are right, third largest con now.
Wow.
Right? Behind San Diego?
No, San Diego is capped at 130,000. That's all they can get in.
Oh, maybe they
matched San Diego is the largest one in the United States. So
then maybe second.
You know, if they... if they sold 130,000 in one tickets,
yeah,
you can expect those organizers to be jumping up and down saying, we're bigger than the San Diego Comic-Con, which is a kind of a big
it's kind of a big
to do. And
what's weird about it is I noticed so many people coming there that weren't locals, like people from other states, cosplayers that were just at Dragon Con the week before that, you know, weren't there last year, and just a lot of invitations and a lot of people coming out that were there for the first time, and overwhelmed by how many listeners were there. That part surprised me, because last year I hardly talked to anybody. This being their only second year, it was just listener after listener. So a lot of that stuff surprised me. It is definitely that feeling of, I know Phoenix, Mark, we talked about Phoenix before, feeling like this a bit in the early years, but this feeling of it's not mature yet. The organizers are still getting their hands around stuff. There's a few things about it you wish it was different or better, and better placement or whatever.
Sure.
But they learned a lot this year. They put Artist Alley people, which is where I was, much closer to where the entrance of the thing was, which meant we got a ton of foot traffic. And everyone I talked to was much happier about that. Other artists and stuff. And then they used the entire convention space, as opposed to last year, it was only like 2/3 of it. That definitely helped. But yeah, you definitely got the vibe that, yeah, we're still getting, you know, we're working the kinks out of how to do this. We should have been doing this for 20 years. Why are we so stupid to just start? But isn't it awesome that we're doing so well so far? That was kind of the overall feeling. And
how cool is it that it's just in your backyard?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I've been saying since I was a teenager, why don't we have a Comic-Con? This is so dumb. Yeah. Even back when Comic-Cons were, you know, tiny and not that big a deal, it just felt like there's a nerd crowd here, and there always has been. And I don't know why it took them this long, but yeah, it was nice to see that kind of explode and
was
do
it
well.
The Mormons?
The Mormons.
Blame the Mormons.
I guess
I watched a whole documentary about Clean Flicks.
Oh, that. Yeah, that documentary, that guy's a psycho.
I know they don't cotton to that kind of stuff there. No, I'm just kidding.
No, that's a special case, that documentary. Good Lord, those guys.
That was awesome.
That guy, the psycho who... Ugh.
I know.
People should watch that documentary.
It's so great.
It's really weird.
It's so worth your time.
Yeah, totally worth watching. I forgot what it's called. Is it just Clean called Flicks. Clean Flicks? Is that the name of it?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was great, and it was fun to see, and tons of kids, and just had a really great, cosplay was off the charts in some cases. It was good. So
did you meet Kellett?
I saw him, and he did a showing of Strip there as well. I wasn't able to go to that. I was manning the booth, and I saw him just briefly across a bunch of people that I couldn't get to him and just say hi and say, hey, friend of Scott's, how's it going? Love what you're doing, blah, blah, but I never got a chance. So I think he did okay there. Stan Lee was there and got mobbed. Lots of, you know, we didn't get Shatner this year, Adam last year. Let's see, Warburton was there. Anyway, all the usual faces were there. And it was fun. It was really good. So I'm glad now that this exists. And the cool thing about the city is it is not, say, unlike, I don't know, Seattle or Boston or some where the cities are kind of landlocked and kind of smushed together. It's kind of hard to disperse. So when something like this ends, you're stuck in terrible traffic. There's nowhere to eat because everything's packed, or, you know, it gets crazy. Salt Lake's gridded out in such a way that you can just get the hell out of there and very quickly find, you know, somewhere to hang out or eat or whatever.
Nice.
And I liked it. Anyway, it was a good time. So I think as a regional con goes, and as these keep cropping up, it's a good one, and it's nice to see good support here locally. So that's my review of that. And I was really tired by the end of it. But we sold a lot of prints, so I guess that's all that matters. Let's talk about the Harveys. We talked about them last time.
Yeah,
people were nominated, including your strip there, Scott Kurtz.
We were. We lost.
Yeah, that's too bad, because I think you should have won. But I'm biased.
Look, I talked to Corey about it the other day. Or yesterday, actually, because Corey is... doing some family stuff. He's out of town. And I said, I got to tell you, man, I'm really bummed that we lost. And he goes, yeah, me too. I wanted it. And we both agreed, like, everyone says they don't care about awards, but everyone cares about awards. I mean, you just spend too much time working on this stuff by yourself. And it's such a weird career. And when your peers get a chance to kind of spotlight who they like, it's important. And, it's just so many people put work into Table Titans. I really wanted it. We really wanted it for Steve and Brian Hurt.
Yeah.
Hammaker is coloring the fuck out of that. And And Brian Hurt's doing so much to make the thing better, and he's put so much into it that now he's going to start doing. He's going to kind of start taking on the strip itself. I mean, he's going to do a spinoff strip.
Oh, wow.
So Table Titans is going to start alternating between my group with Val and then the other group, the Dungeon Dogs, that Brian's going to draw and co-write.
That's great.
So, yeah, I mean, it kind of stinks, but it's a young strip and there's plenty of chances. And you keep forgetting, like, you did get nominated, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. You did fucking get nominated, which is important, too. And also, we lost to the one person I was okay to lose to, because Mike Norton is fucking awesome and Battle Pug is really great.
Yeah, that's a brilliant.
So I'm proud to lose to Mike.
Hey, that and, thing, that weird freaking kid Justice League deal didn't win.
And JLA did not win. So that's look, that's who really won is everyone, because he did not win.
Well, as you said, it's a young strip, and to get nominated this young is still a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
So
you can get pretty cynical about it too, right? I mean, if you want to, just like the Harvey Awards are. So it's so weird. So the Eisners are more of a curated fucking. The Eisners are crazy what goes into nominating those people, and getting people nominated, and it's just. I think one year someone's going to write a story about it with Jackie Estrada and all the shit that goes on with the Eisners. And I mean, PvP getting nominated happened against my wishes. Like, I didn't even nominate PvP I didn't submit it for an Eisner, and it still was nominated and then won. Like, the Eisners are crazy.
Yeah.
But the Harveys are more of a, you know, professionals nominate, professionals submit and vote, and if you have enough professionals, you can kind of, you know, kind of get your shit nominated.
Sure.
That's why for the longest time, if you went to the Harvey Awards, you would see Donald Duck comics by Diamond, Select, Gem. Like, Gem, Diamond had their own company that Steve Geppi ran because he loves Donald Duck so much, the owner of Diamond. Mm. And he had this, like, Gem, what was it, Gem Comics or something?
Yeah, Gem Publishing.
Gem Publishing. And they published Donald Duck books because he fucking loved Donald Duck and he got the rights to do it. And every Harvey Award had a Donald Duck book in it. Mm. You know, every single fucking one of them. And the reason why is because every Harvey Award time, or Ignatz or Eisner's or whatever, Geppi would send a pre-filled out Harvey ballot to every fucking employee of Diamond, because they're professionals, to sign and submit.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Well, that's the thing. All these reward things always have some. Weird...
Yeah, you can get cynical about it, sure, if you want to, but don't. There's no reason to.
No.
I just thought it was an interesting. I got a rant about something. So there.
Yeah. There you go. Right? You're not going to rant about this next
one. Okay, guys.
See how you feel about this. Hey, Mark, how do you feel about your favorite wrestler, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, being Black Adam in upcoming DC films?
My favorite wrestler?
Yeah.
I didn't know I had a favorite wrestler.
I've assigned it to you just now, man.
Yeah. You know, speaking of typecasting, The Rock is one of those actors, and he's not typecast as any of his characters. He's typecast as The Rock. So he's not Roadblock in G.I. Joe. He's not, what the heck did he play, Conan or Hercules or whatever. He's The Rock pretending to be someone else. And
Tooth Fairy.
Yeah. But yeah, like, exactly, this is a good example of that. He can play any character he wants, but he's always The Rock, and yeah. I can't get that out of my mind when I see the guy. So sure.
I like The Rock, but I'm with you that it's always The Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like you can do, I mean, talk about a guy, all right, he may seem the polar opposite of Michael Cera in every possible way, but they're kind of the same in that they always play the same guy.
Right.
And I kind of like both for that. So I'm cool with it. You know, he can be whoever he wants to be, but you know, with DC's line that seems to be credible, or at least, you know, best we can tell, 'cause everyone's talking about it from reputable sources, that DC wants no funny business in any of their hero movies, as opposed to what Marvel's doing with a lot of jokes and stuff like that. I don't know if I want a serious Black Adam. I mean, I want a serious Black Adam, I suppose, but I, you know, The Rock is also prone to big grins and happy moments, and I don't know how this all works. And I'm not a giant, I don't know that much about Black Adam, but I know it's a cool villain, and it's fine with me. Is this, have we lost our chance to have Dwayne Johnson as a proper hero in either of these universes? Maybe. This might be it.
Maybe. I mean, there's a number of different ways to look at Black Adam. If obviously he can be the villain or he can be the anti-hero. Mm. Certainly when they did 52, the weekly series over at DC, they painted Black Adam to be a sympathetic bad guy who was just looking out for his people. I'm sure in this case, if they're doing a full-out Captain Marvel movie, which obviously will have to be called Shazam, he's going to be the heavy.
Yeah.
And so he's going to have to bust some heads.
If my Shazam movie doesn't have quote unquote Shazam living in a freaking Winnebago and traveling around the country, then we are doing it wrong. Do you remember that shitty show? That was the worst thing ever made.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I mean, I loved it as a kid, but
the old Shazam and ISIS hour?
Yeah, yep. Dude. Oh, ISIS, dude. ISIS was bad.
Yeah.
Some of that's on YouTube. You can relive some pretty special moments from ISIS if you are so inclined. We also got in the main stuff today some shots of the new Batmobile. These were leaked images from an account that is now marked private, so it's hard to verify where these came from, but it does look to be the real deal. They're heavily sort of brightened up in dark lighting to kind of show what's going on here, but this is the new Batmobile. The internet's awash with I hate it or I love it. I don't know. I think it's all right. It looks like a combination of the Tumblr and a little bit of Burton-esque stuff thrown in there. A little bit more of a sleek design than the Tumblr. Tumblr was kind of a, you know, I like the Tumblr, but it was definitely more, you know, military vehicle. And then
it's right. a little Mad Maxy in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And since we don't know what time period this tale takes place, the pictures that I'm looking at, the Batmobile's dirty and cruddy and mm-hmm. looks like it's been in storage for years. So if it's busting out and going to go kick some Superman butt, then I want it to look dirty and aged. I don't want it to look sleek and shiny.
Yeah. And it's parked probably just to be parked. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure this is a scene.
Parked next to like a Toyota Camry.
Yeah, there's a picture. Yeah, I think that's what that is over there. There's like a Camry parallel.
Don't mind that.
but like this stuff over the wheels in the back is cool. I mean, in mm-hmm. a way, I feel like it's a nice nod to fans to say, look, we know a lot of you really like what Nolan did, so we're going to have hints of that here. But we're also going to get back to the big rear end, more aerodynamic kind of design that you're used to, and mm-hmm. I'm cool with that. So I really don't have a problem with it. I don't know. I'm. Somebody suggested the other day that we've been saying forever, and Scott, we've talked about this on the show a bunch of times, but you know what the last Superman did was pretty egregious in some of our minds in terms of what you know, the devastation in the city and his unwillingness to sort of acknowledge it. And a lot of people have suggested that the storyline here, without any actual leaks, but suggested the storyline here very well may be Bruce Wayne holding Superman to account. And the idea being that he is like, no, you can't just let that happen that happened there in Metropolis, and you've got to freaking man up and do justice here. And that's where this fight comes from, or where this whole versus things comes from. I kind of hope that that's true, but maybe that's what's coloring my overall kind of anticipation. I'm actually kind of pretty excited about this movie.
No, I'm totally excited.
I'm more than just like, oh, a new superhero movie. I don't care if it's bad. I'll go see it. I'm actually kind of stoked about what they plan to do. And I know I've been let down before. I was excited about Superman, and that kind of let me down. So, you know, maybe I'm totally wrong in doing this. But, Steven, what's in your head? Why are you excited?
Well, here's the reason why I'm excited. Over in the Marvel universe, and again, we can argue story and all these different things and talk humor and whatever, but over in the Marvel universe, hey, look, there's Iron Man standing next to Thor and Captain America. Show me a DC movie that we've seen on the big screen where any of the heroes are standing next to another hero.
Yeah,
so this will be the first time that we get to see Batman and Superman on the screen at the same time without just casual references to, oh, that guy over in Metropolis or that creepy guy flying around Gotham City. We get to see these characters on screen together, and that's what I'm excited about.
Sure.
Except,
okay, here we go.
Marvel fucking earned it.
Yeah, they did.
They did.
They earned it.
You're
they
right.
built it.
You're right.
Superman, Batman is just going to be, remember that shitty Superman movie? What if it had Batman in it?
All right. Now, look, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're probably more right than I am. I have to have hope for this because they really are. I mean, this is the Trinity. Don't forget about Wonder Woman being this thing. This is the Trinity of comic book characters. The people that still populate the top five every month in comic sales. The people that make DC a thing to care about. And the thing that it mattered so much to me as a kid. And as much as I love Marvel, and Marvel's really, not only did I love Marvel before, but they really pumped themselves higher in everybody's mind. Even if you weren't even a fan of Marvel, you got to respect what's going on. You're right, they've earned it. All that stuff's true. It is actually possible for this movie to come out and be good. It is possible.
They don't have to succeed in the same way Marvel did. They could take a slightly different path, just make good decisions, tell a good story, and they could get there too.
Yeah, totally.
But the problem is they don't know who their characters are. That's the thing that's so terrible, is these guys just don't have a clue what they want their characters to be.
Well, do you think they don't know who Batman needs to be? Because we
they know who Batman needs to be, probably. They don't know who the hell Wonder Woman's supposed to be, and they don't know who the hell Superman's supposed to be. Mm.
Steven, do we know about the origin of Wonder Woman in this? Are they going to go full-on Amazon Forest business, or are they going to go some other?
Well, Paradise Island is, I'm guessing, what they're going to go with, or Themyscira. But I doubt we don't know. We just don't know.
What did they do with Linda Carter? I don't remember her origin.
Paradise Island.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Cloris Leachman was her mother.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
She's awesome. National treasure, that woman. I'll say that to my dying day. Or hers. All right, moving on. Let's do some quick stuff here.
It got dark.
Okay, it got dark real quick. Batman Arkham Knight. This is the brand new Arkham Knights, rather. A brand new video game arrives June 2nd, 2015. It was originally scheduled for this year, and they delayed it. It looks really hot. People are excited about it. It's the third and final in the trilogy. Well, there's four total, but they didn't do the Origins one. But it's the same company that did the first two. And this is their big swan song with the story, and it looks really, really good. True next-gen looking game, and it looks bad, eh? Steven, I love this list. We got premiere dates for all comic book-related properties.
Yeah.
Gotham, September 22nd. That's coming up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Day after my daughter's wedding.
Oh, hey-o.
I'm still not used to even saying those words.
Well, that's coming. That came fast.
Yeah, it did. I got a week and a half or something. It's crazy.
Grandpappy Johnson.
Soon. Oh, Lord. Let's see. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. September 23rd on ABC. Coming back. A lot of people like how that all ended up in the end. So I guess they're excited about that, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, they are.
It ended better than it started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Star Wars Rebels, October 3rd on TV, but September 29th on WatchDisneyXD.com.
Shut up. It's going to be awesome.
That does look good. I think it's going to look good. I think that looks great, actually. I'm stoked about that.
I hope so.
The Flash. October 7th on the CW.
Mm-hmm.
You got your Green Arrow season 3, October 8th, CW. So
you guys got me hooked on that show.
It's good.
Yeah.
It got real good. Real good after that first season. First season's still pretty weak. Walking Dead, The Walking Dead. You got that on your October 12th on AMC. Constantine, October 24th on NBC. I have no expectation for that. I don't know what to think. The movie was
neat.
Comics great. I don't know.
It's going to be different. I hope they do it right.
Yeah,
we know somebody who's working on that TV show, Scott.
I know. Are you talking about DV?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We need to get him on, but he can't. He's probably
he's under some embargo stuff.
Yeah, probably can't. Powers, PlayStation Network, December 2014. Now, is this live action or animated?
No, it's a live action.
Okay, because the stuff they showed at E3 was all these like concept art, and I could never quite tell if they were what they were doing there.
So if I don't have a PlayStation, I just don't get to see it.
Yeah. Yes. Except I think you can.
There's something about PlayStation TV that you can pay like $9.99 a month or something. I forget what that
is.
But
something weird. I mean, it's part of. If you're a Plus member, you get it for free. Which everyone, if you're actively using a PlayStation, you're probably on Plus. And so, but if not, this will be like the way like that Halo TV stuff. It'll be like that on mm-hmm. Xbox. If you're on an Xbox, you can't watch that either, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see these guys doing this, I don't know if it'll be any good or not, but it's an interesting play.
I don't see it as... Honestly, I think it's a gamble that neither company should be taking.
I kind of feel like it's too far. Yeah. They all want to be all things to everyone.
I don't think Microsoft should be saying, hey, we want to be Netflix or we want to be Hulu. And I don't think in Sony's situation, they most definitely don't need to be taking giant risks and saying, hey, let's get people to buy all of our PlayStations so that they can watch this power show, because it's not going to happen.
Well,
they're going to spend a lot of money and they're going to come away with a lot of nothing.
To Sony's credit, they have spent more focus on the game side than Microsoft has. Microsoft's kind of turning around and kind of turning a corner on that, because that thing's not selling very well, so they've got to do something. Mm-hmm. But you know, in a weird way, I feel like if they don't put a foot into this market where Netflix has original programming, Amazon has it, if they're all coming up with their own original shows, I feel like if these two companies don't do something, they just never will, and it's worth the risk to them for some reason. I don't know. I'm not that excited about it, to be honest. But maybe Powers is amazing. We're all going to have shit.
It's a great concept. If you've never read the series, read it. Who Killed Retro Girl is an amazing arc.
Yeah, it's good. Agent Carter coming to January 2015 to ABC.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
me too.
I think she is one of the best things about Captain America, and that was the one bummer about Cap to me, was that whole era, that whole World War II era, is such a great era to do stories in.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And it was over so quick.
Yeah.
I forget which episode. There's an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that will focus only on Agent Carter. And then that's going to be the launching point for the January series, which will kind of buffer between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fall and winter or spring showings.
Yeah, that'll be good. By the way, I have a prediction we haven't talked about. I think after these Star Wars movies, the first couple will just totally destroy the box office and they're hopefully good. We will finally get Star Wars TV that isn't animated.
Mm-hmm.
I think a regular series would be really
great.
That'd
be interesting.
Well, they talked about it for so long.
Yeah, they have.
Never did it. Let's see. Finally, iZombie 2015, the CW. So I guess, Walking Dead, we've got pretty teenagers as zombies, so get ready for that. And Daredevil, May 2015 on Netflix. And then Heroes 2015 on NBC. Whoa, coming back.
What?
Yeah, it's a real limited season 5 that they're doing.
Stop.
I know, dude.
Why?
I know. I hated it. I didn't like it. I'm not going to like it now. Even season 1, which everyone raves about, I didn't like season 1. I don't know.
Oh, it was so bad.
I didn't like it. Guardians of the Galaxy becomes the top grossing film of 2014, finally.
Huh?
It has made more money than anything and may make more money in the end than anything that came out last year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Still number 1 at the box office. Go there now. That's what everyone's watching still. It's totally crazy. Let's see. How much money total so far?
Box office Mooji.
I'm looking here. 3.2. No, I'm sorry. That's not it. I'm trying to add it all up and it's not.
Guardians of the Galaxy, 721,759,000 worldwide. No, 587 million worldwide, 295 domestic.
They'll hit their billion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
It's awesome.
Yeah. We want more of that.
More of that, please. Because it was fan-freaking-tastic. Let's talk about what we're reading.
The stolen plans of the Vibrator were destroyed, along with the only two criminals who knew how to operate it.
Scott Kurtz, any time for any comics? Any consumption?
No, I've been playing too many games. Can I talk about games instead?
Yeah, what are you playing?
I'm playing WildStar. And I want everyone to give it a shot. And I think the game's taking a bit of a beating right now. Because the end game, which is there, was set up to be super challenging. And I think the problem they're experiencing is that a lot of players want to raid and were on board with raiding, and maybe the attunement process got... Anyway, the point is, it's one of these things where... Imagine WoW, something you like as much as WoW, but the devs are for real listening to you.
Mm.
They care about the community, and they want to make the game better, and they want you to help them make the game better. And I just, if you like Firefly, if you like Guardians, you're gonna love this game. I mean, if you want to get invested in MMO, and I think a lot of people got burnt on a lot of MMOs, but anyway.
This is part of the problem. So many come and go, and they're all, you know, flash in the pan, whatever.
And I think WildStar's here to stay, and they're what I'm really excited about is they're doing this thing called mega servers. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, it's cool.
It's really such a good idea, and it made me realize a lot about how a tech savvy audience like gamers can just hang on to words that don't mean anything anymore. They say free to play as if it's something bad.
Yeah.
Like free to play isn't as valuable a business model as charging for something. And they think the idea of a one mega server, which is going to be so great for our guild and for every guild, is some kind of sign of failure. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I just want everyone to give WildStar another chance. And then also I want to ask you, why did I download Destiny? What do you like so much about this game?
All right. So Destiny, I've had a couple days with it now. A day with it, I guess, because it was just yesterday. And I played the beta with some level of length, and then I quit because I didn't want to waste, you know, I didn't want to see it all before I got the final game.
Yeah, I feel the same way about betas.
Yeah, betas are weird. I have formed a slightly, my opinion is evolving of that game. I think multiplayer-wise, when you're playing with friends, there's it's extremely fun with friends. I really like playing with buddies and hopping into these fire team things and kicking trash and getting loot and leveling up and all that. It's kind of a Diablo vibe in that way, and I'm a big fan of that. The game loses a lot of its luster when you play it alone, and I'm learning that more and more because they're recycling a lot of these missions. It's all very samey in a lot of ways. You're in a lot of the same environments, and the word out there is that that's kind of true through most of it, but it shines, I think, as a multiplayer experience, as a co-op experience. And kind of a little rough outside of that. I don't think it's...
Because I got to say, I downloaded it and I played it quite a bit last night.
Yeah.
And it very much feels like, hey, remember us? Remember Halo? Mm-hmm. Well, now instead of a Spartan, you're a Guardian. And now instead of the Halo, it's this Traveler. And remember these guys?
Remember the Flood? Now, they're the
Darkening. Now you're shooting these chuckleheads.
Right, right. No, you're not wrong. There's I mean, this is so much a Bungie game. And you could say that before Halo even. Bungie is always the same themes. They always do. They always have. There's always some weird space object like the Guardian or the Halo or in, I'm trying to think of the game before that I played a bunch of. Anyway, they've always done this. And so that stuff is fine, whatever. I think actually aesthetically the game's very beautiful and all this stuff. My biggest problem with it is I think it falls apart a little bit as a single-player game, whereas something that's similar to this, like Borderlands, tonally it's different, but it's similar in the term of, you know, what you're trying to do and how you're trying to advance, far superior single-player experience. Now, maybe they meant this just as co-op, and that's fine, and that's how I'm going to play it, and that's what I want to do with my friends. And when I have done that, that is when I'm having fun. But as a single player game where I just want to go solo some stuff, which I need from these kinds of games as a, you know, as a way to play them, I feel like it's fallen pretty short for me.
And now I can't play with you because I'm on an Xbox.
Oh, that's right. I was going to say we should hook up, but you're not even on the same.
No, we can't do it.
And it's not the kind of game that couldn't be platform cross compatible. It totally could be. I don't know why they don't. I mean, what's the difference? You're on a console, I'm on a console. It's servers just, you know, I could have done it. I don't know why they didn't, but they didn't.
Have they ever done that? Has there ever been a cross-console game?
Yeah, there's some out there. I want to say,
DCUO, was that?
One is cross-computer to PlayStation, but they never had a version on the Xbox.
Okay.
But there are examples. I just can't think of any. It's rare, though.
I wonder if it was like that Phantasy Star Online was one of them or
something. That might have been it. Now that I think about it, you might be right on that one. But there've been attempts, and usually it's an attempt between console and PC, but the fact that this one isn't, it's just a little weird because I think you could totally do that. I mean, the old consoles, they had limited platform issues and stuff where maybe you couldn't, but in this case, I don't know why it's not happening. That would be really fun if we could play.
I think for Destiny, the key for me is if they really bring in the MMO elements that make me really identify with my character. And in a first-person shooter, that can be difficult to do. Mm-hmm. So they want, if I have that feeling where I need, you know, early days of WoW or any MMO where you've got this like, I just want a progression. I just want to make my character better.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I have that with this character. If I don't, then it just becomes a multiplayer FPS and like any other one, I'll be done with it in a month.
Sure. I worry for its longevity. It's been 4 years in the making. There's really brilliant people behind it. It's amazing art, amazing music, amazing everything. I need it to be.
It's just funny. I saw all these commercials and everyone's talking about it. It's like, oh, this big new thing. And then I played it last night and it's Halo with a different skin. And at one point, a bunch of mobs just spawned and were frozen, and I just killed them all.
Oh, that's not
And
good.
I'm like, oh, all right.
And
well,
bug,
I mean,
and bugs.
Yeah, and bugs. Yeah. But I mean, I feel bad giving them a hard time for bugs.
Sure, those show up.
They'll show up. But yeah, I just was trying to figure out. Because honestly, then I watched, before I went to bed, I was watching someone on Twitch play, I don't know, one of the Call of Duty games, one of the inappropriate Let's Glorify War things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is the same thing as Destiny, except now it's war. And these are, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the big difference is supposed to be, at least for me, what attracts me to these games or what made Destiny interesting to me at all is character progression, loot, randomization. You know, that stuff's interesting to me. I want Diablo in all my games, basically, is what I want. I want that next thing's going to drop, that next level's going to hit, that next skill's going to be available. Like, that's where my interest comes in. I can find a million good shooters. And this is a good shooter. I mean, it feels good. It feels like Halo. You're not wrong. But, if you know, the shooting's good. It's impactful. All that stuff's there. But they really need to make sure the content, the quests, the reason for me to play is, and they have to keep adding to it. If they don't do that, then this thing will be pretty short-lived.
And it's a little bit loot light in the beginning, at least. Like, we're playing last night, and we're just like, there's no drops. There's, like, nothing the first few levels. There's a couple chests that you can get, but that's about it.
Yeah, once in a while I get, like, a new pair of shoes, and they're barely 1 point better than the
ones
you
had. Oh, so in this game, like, you might randomly get a cool gun that someone else doesn't have.
Yeah, nobody else would get it. Sure, I got a chess piece yesterday that was like that, and it's actually awesome. And
And so that was interesting because yesterday I was playing, and I saw another player.
Yeah,
and we started he was just in there with me, and then we turned a corner and he was gone. Like we phased out from each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not in an explicit fire team and you go into a phased area, the dude will disappear.
Yeah.
Because there's public stuff, and then there's. And not all that stuff's very clear. Also, the story, I don't know what's happening. I mean, I know that it's kind of Halo-like in the story, but I still really don't know why Peter Dinklage is scanning everything and telling me that they've gone to another place. You know, there's not a lot of cohesion there. And maybe none of that matters. Maybe the whole goal of this is, wow, this is sure fun with my friends. I'm fine with that. That just needs to be that needs to be good and stay good. And right now I'm a little worried. But I'm still in, so... Well,
I'm not giving up on it at all. So
yeah, and it's all anyone's talking about right now, which doesn't mean anything other than, you know, reviews will start hitting. Weirdly, there are no pre-reviews, so there were no reviews up on Metacritic or anywhere else yet. I suspect that will be telling. That'll either, because some of these guys have had, 30, 40 hours with this thing, and they'll know better than we will how it all plays out in the end game and whatnot. I read comics. So last week we had a listener recommend. Let's see if I can remember their name. Oh, shoot. I'd like to give them credit. Anyway, while that loads, I started reading. Oh, here it is. Troy. So I want to thank Troy. He recommended Wild Blue Yonder, which by Zach Howard, Mike Reicht or Raicht, I don't know how you say his name, and Adam Harris, or Austin Harrison, rather. Sorry. And it's the art that really drew me in from Zach. It's awesome. I really totally dig it. He described it as like, hey, the Rocketeer meets Indiana Jones meets Mad Max kind of. And it's totally that. There's some sort of apocalypse and mankind has moved into the air and giant airships. And that's where you live and you have dogfights every day. And it's very steampunk and lots of sort of leather helms and stuff. Guys with jetpacks. Jumping from plane to plane, trying to sabotage enemies. And the whole story arc is that there is a ship. I forgot the name of it. Something Dawn. Morning Dawn? Anyway, that has no need to refuel. Because all these other ships are constantly having to go down to the planet's surface, find these old refineries, figure out if they can get stuff, fight for it, kill for it, whatever, to keep fuel to stay in the air. And they supposedly have figured out a way to never need fuel again. So they're like this albatross everybody wants to find. And great villain, great people working for that villain, some good twists. It's an interesting thing. The art is awesome. I love it. It feels like carved. I don't even know how to describe it, but the art's really good. It's a weird juxtaposition, though, because the comic itself is super clean, super family-friendly. No cussing, the themes are pretty light in terms of, for what it is anyway, but the action is bloody, man. Whew. Some bloody, bloody business. It's just an interesting contrast. started out as a Kickstarter back in 2012, and they hit their goal, and this thing's still coming out, and I'm probably 7 issues in. No, I don't think it's even that many out. I must only be 4 or 5. And it's on IDW now. They're the publisher, and I really, really like it. It's just totally, I mean, I'll admit the themes are totally up my alley, and that might be why I like it so much. But the art is amazing, and I think the writing is nothing like, oh, this is the most complex story I've ever read by any means, but it's good, and it does the job, and I like the characters, and again, the art is there. That's definitely just worth seeing on its own. So check it out, Wild Blue Yonder, IDW. It's on Comixology, and awesome. I like it a lot. Mark, cool. What are you reading, dude?
Not a whole lot. Much like Scott, I've been playing video games and watching movies. And, you know, I'm an old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan.
Yeah.
And because none of you bastards are going to go see the movie, I decided to go see it.
I heard. You took a bullet, dude.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's, you know what? I wasn't that disappointed. You know, and I'm a long-time fan of the comics, the cartoons. And it's just, at this point, it's just the goofiness of it all I really enjoy. So I can go into a movie like that without huge expectations and still come out of it pretty satisfied. There's definitely some good and some bad to it. First of all, it's not as bad as I expected it to be, so that's good. Oh, and by the way, I don't know how to talk about movies and avoid spoilers, so if you're really worried about spoilers in this,
skip forward now.
Skip forward, yeah, is what it is. So one of the things that bugs me about this is the art style, and it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like, you know how Shark Tale with the teeth, where the fish have teeth?
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to give them that sort of humanoid look.
Yeah.
It's so friggin' disturbing. It just bothers me. And the way that their noses are shaped with the little nose holes and everything, it's creepier than it needs to be.
Yeah.
Now, in spite of that, though, what really grew on me was how hulking and powerful the turtles are in this, which they're usually not. I mean, they're muscular, but they're usually short because they're, you know, in the past they were played by little Japanese guys.
Right.
So in this case, they're hulking, like really scary kind of strong, which it grew on me. I thought that was really cool. The supporting actors in this were surprisingly good. Will Arnett was in it. Whoopi Goldberg is in it. And that dude, William Fichtner?
Fichtner, yeah.
Fichtner, yeah. I don't know how to pronounce
it. He's not Slicer. What's wrong with my brain?
Shredder.
He's not Shredder.
No. He's Shredder's buddy.
Oh, okay.
He's the other bad guy that didn't need to be in the movie.
I'm a big fan of Fichtner. I think he's great.
For those
who don't know, he's the one in the second Batman Nolan movie where he's at the bank when the Joker's there with all his Joker buddies robbing the bank, and he tries to pull out a shotgun. Yeah. That guy.
Does he play Bebop or Rocksteady?
You know what? Nicole and I had this disagreement on the way home. I mentioned something about Rocksteady and Bebop, and she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you don't know who Rocksteady and Bebop are.
No.
And we decided we would need to survey the community and find out how many people actually know who Rocksteady and Bebop are.
Wow.
I think more than she thinks. But well, anyway, they got Michelangelo right. He's kind of a tough sell because he's always the one with the quips and the funny comments and could be done really, really poorly. But I think they struck a balance with Michelangelo. He was funny. There was a lot of like relevant humor in it, and we actually were laughing. You know, as two adults, it was pretty good.
And Bebop's the like pig-like character, right?
Well, Rocksteady and Bebop are the rhino and the warthog mutated to be sort of the henchmen for Shredder.
Got it.
So now on to the bad. There were some pointless, at least what I felt were pointless modifications to the origin story that kind of sucked the heart and the motivation out of everything. So, and there's a lot of different versions of the origin story, but almost all of them have this tie-in between Splinter and Shredder in some sort of former life or something that has a backstory to it that makes you think that there's a reason they should be fighting at this point in New York City. So that is completely removed from this, where the Shredder is just kind of reduced to a token bad guy, and their only historical connection that's there is a deep tie that exists between Shredder and William Fichtner, the other bad guy.
Right.
So they've got a deep story, but nothing with the Turtles and what's his name? Splinter. So
here's the rat dude, or how do they do Splinter?
Oh, he's a rat dude. Yeah.
Okay. Big rat, like a CGI big rat dude?
Yeah, he's as big of a rat as the turtles are big turtles.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and he does some cool stuff with him, too. Like, he's got this sort of prehensile tail action that he can use when he fights, which is kind of new. But,
I was kind of hoping it was going to be, like, some crappy little, like, just a straight-up rat where they CGI mouth movement or something. I was hoping that would be
like that Babe. Would be good.
Yeah, like Babe Pig in the City, dude.
So are they mutants? Was the ooze in it and stuff?
Yeah, so there is the mutation. It's borrowing a little bit from the old and from the new stuff in the comics where there was a lab that they were part of and they wound up being mutated. The changes they made were just unnecessary. So it was kind of random how they got into this situation. Splinter, instead of having this sort of deep knowledge of, you know, because he's originally from Japan and has this feud with the Shredder, Splinter, as a rat, once he was mutated, finds a book about ninjutsu and decides to start to learn it. So Daniel LaRusso style, he's there with the manual practicing Crazy. His kicks, right? Crazy. And then he teaches
like
it.
You do.
Yeah. And then he teaches it to the turtles. So now this whole concept of Splinter being like the old wise instructor who's teaching the turtles the old ways of ninjutsu is now just the dude who learned it from a book who's teaching it to four turtles. So he barely knows more than the turtles do, and you completely lose that kind of like Japanese sensei sort of
mystery
thing.
Guy, yeah, that has so much knowledge, and
and he's supposed to be kind of like the Yoda thing, where he's feeble and weak until it's time to kick ass. Yeah. But now he just knows only a little bit more than the turtles know. So that was really bothersome. There's no Casey Jones in this, which was kind of disappointing. Instead, they bring in an extra bad guy, and they also make. April O'Neil's, her sort of counterpart in the news situation is Vern. And Vern is always kind of just like this feeble, scared guy who's kind of her competition. They're not really friends. Well, Vern is now her love interest in this instead of Casey Jones.
Is that Job? What's his name?
That's Will Arnett.
Will Arnett, yeah.
And he's good. He's good. But I just don't think that was even necessary. That was just kind of dumb. Now, here's my big problem with the movie is Megan Fox. I do not like her as April O'Neil.
Yeah.
And here's the problem.
Did she show her weird thumbs? Is that why?
No, I was totally looking for the thumbs. I didn't see them.
Okay.
They did a good job
of
hiding.
They hide those now, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
Dude. I'm not making that up. Yeah, I'll send you a link here in a second while he's talking.
No, it's fine. I'm not going to make fun of her.
You got to find a flaw.
You need to see him.
But here's the thing.
You at least have to see him. They're not. You don't have to make fun of her. You just got to see him. All right, go ahead.
Yeah,
and I've seen him. I just didn't know if that was real or not.
Oh, all right. Yeah, it's real.
I think it's real. And here's the thing with Megan Fox. I'm really trying to avoid sounding even remotely sexist here, but with Megan Fox, there's so much of, and again, back to this typecasting thing, Megan Fox as a Hollywood starlet with supermodel quality looks, I have a real hard time buying her as a sort of story-hungry journalist riding around New York on a bicycle wearing a helmet.
Mm.
I don't buy it. It's completely unconvincing. She looks every bit Hollywood. When it's raining, her hair's dry. You know, her makeup is always perfect. She doesn't have that girl next
door. I'll
give
you a non-sexist example because I don't think this is sexist what you're saying. This is like imagining, we'll go back to The Rock. Dwayne The Rock Johnson running a street-side taco stand. Imagine that.
Yeah.
You know, or making crepes in the back in the kitchen of some restaurant.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work for who knows why. So maybe it's sexist on both sides, but I understand what you're saying. I totally get it.
Yeah. And it's not just her being an attractive woman, it's just her being Megan Fox.
Hmm.
And that's the problem I have with it. So
you can't break free of that.
What, break free?
You're not going to break free of that.
Well, of course not. But the point is, like, what if you had, who's in Spider-Man now? What's her name?
Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
She'd be great. Scrappy.
Dude, in my examples here, my perfect April O'Neil, first one, Emma Stone. And the other chick who's kind of like an Emma Stone light is the Suburgatory girl.
Mm.
You know who I'm talking about?
No, wait, what's that?
She'd be great. Or what about Kat Dennings from Thor?
Sure. I like Kat Dennings a lot. She's great. She's Nora from Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
Right. Yeah, you got to have this sort of...
I'm really? Sorry, what?
We love that movie around here. Okay. It's a total chick flick, but I like it.
you got to have the girl next door quality, totally. So she could be totally hot, but in a girl next door sort of way. And it has to be believable that she's got this drive to be a really successful journalist.
Sure, that's just good casting is what you're talking about.
Exactly, yeah. Sure. And I just don't think Megan Fox needed to be in the movie. Last thing, there was about 10 minutes spent showing us these turtles sliding down a mountain. and showing off, you know, all this CGI, totally unnecessary. Give me 2 minutes of that and put 8 minutes back into telling me a better background story that makes me think that these events should actually happen.
Is that the one where they slow motion down the thing and hit the Jeep on the side and all that?
Yeah. It's all part of that. And it's just ridiculous as this 18-wheeler is sliding down this mountain. And it's got to be the lowest sloped, longest mountain in the world. As they're like, you know, they're not tipping over. They're just kind of skidding down for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, other than that, overall, not too disappointed with it. But if you like the Turtles, you'll probably like it.
All right, Steven.
Man, you guys have had some good discussions. I've learned a lot because I was wondering about whether I should pick up Destiny. I think the only game time that I'm getting on Xbox One right now is Minecraft. My son is totally all over that.
Oh, good.
I did finally watch that Lather, Rinse, Repeat movie with Tom Cruise, which was actually pretty good.
It was good, right?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be crappy, and then I sat down and watched it the other night, and I was like, this is actually really good. I'm glad they changed the title of the movie to Live, Die, Repeat.
This is the Edge of Tomorrow deal.
Yeah.
I forgot they were going to do that. That movie. I had a great time.
It was really good. But unfortunately, I have not read any comics since the last time we've talked, but today, Future's End spills out all over DC, the DC universe. Now, Future's End is a story where Batman Beyond, everyone who loves Batman Beyond, something is happening in the future, and he is traveling to the past to try to prevent catastrophe, and somehow he lands 5 years from where he was supposed to be at. So they did a whole, I think it's 20 weeks of Future's End, just talking about Batman and everything going on in that five-year later landscape. And today, now that spills out into Batgirl and Birds of Prey and Batman and a whole bunch of other comic books. So what I'm going to do between now and the next time we record, read all of the Future's End story and whatever titles that have come out that spin out of that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So there's about 20 issues between now and next week.
That's great. I'm a huge fan of Batman Beyond. That's like one of my favorite, like, was a cartoon, made it into the comics, is now part of the lore and the core canon. I think I have a lot of fun with that stuff. It's still one of my favorite series. And I don't think it lasted very long. It's like 3 years or less.
Yeah, I think it was 3 years. Three seasons, I think, is what
it's on Netflix. It's great. It's really
it is a good series.
It's the only iteration of Batman I'm interested in seeing as a movie at this point.
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, God.
I'm with you, dude. That'd be awesome.
Maybe that's what they can do with the next Batfleck.
Well,
it's old Bruce Wayne, and you get some scrappy young kid in.
Sure. I mean, that's basically the scenario I was painting earlier with Iron Man, but I think it works a lot better for Batman. Plus, there's this, you know, there's actually some precedents for it already existing, so you could kind of get away with it. But I don't think they ever do that. They're too chicken. There's no way they do that. Even as
right
a,
now, they are.
Yeah, even as a spinoff. Like, Marvel's earned enough cred here. They could do something like this in addition to the mainline. They could do like comic books.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they did Guardians of the Galaxy. They'll do Doctor Strange.
Sure.
But, I don't know if it's because of this Rupert Murdoch buyout thing that fell through. And the shareholders are now saying, hey, you guys lost billions of dollars when the stock dropped. If they're being super conservative right now, and we know that they've got layoffs coming across the board at WB, I'm wondering if they're more focused on the business and what movies are going to for sure make them money and redeem themselves, as opposed to, hey, let's do Batman Beyond that no one knows about. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird time for the WB.
Yeah. Weird time. It's a weird time for all of us, Steven. It's very weird.
It's a weird time for everyone.
It really is. And that's going to do it for the show. My goal, by the way, between now and next time we record is to catch up on Saga because I'm way behind and I want to catch up. So I'm going to do a bunch of that. Oh, and the, is it All-American Western?
All-Star Western. Is that what you're thinking of? Jonah Hex?
Yeah, I want to read the new stuff.
That series just ended.
Did it?
Yeah,
okay.
Last week.
I'm going to eat that up, I think. And
32 issues, I think, is all the further it went.
How did it do? Did people like it?
It was a good series. I mean, it's really weird because, you know, the series starts off with Jonah Hex in Gotham City in the 1800s. And people are like, how the hell is that going to make any sense? Why slam Batman into it? But they did a really good job in that first arc. And then it continued after that. It's a good series.
I seem to remember, Mark, you talking about it on the show. You were reading it.
Yeah, I read through. I've got to catch up on the last two issues, but it was good. It was a little weird with some of the time travel stuff that happens at some point. But overall, it's just Jonah Hex. If you like the character, it's just stories with Jonah Hex. It's a lot of fun.
I do like that stuff. So Hungry for a real Western, too. There hasn't been one in a while.
Yeah.
So let's make that happen, Hollywood. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. As always, you can find Scott Kurtz at PVPOnline.com, as well as Table Titans. This is TableTitans.com, right?
Yep, TableTitans.com.
Simple, easy to find. Follow him on Twitter at PVPOnline. You can also find Steven Schleicher at majorspoilers.com, where all the pop culture of the world is being captured. Oh, tell people about the costume contest. I don't want to forget this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So if people are interested in winning an iPad mini, we've got the costume contest running. The deadline is October 11th to send some pictures of yourself in your costume and one out of your costume so we can kind of make sure that it's you. Still street clothes.
Yeah.
But we will narrow it down to some semifinalists, and then we'll let everybody vote on the finalists, and the winner will get that iPad mini on October 31st.
That's awesome. You were glad. You're so probably glad they didn't announce some crazy new upgrade that cost more money yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So everybody head over to majorspoilers.com. You'll find the link right there on the right column, and we'll look forward to your entry.
And the one of us who's doing really yeoman's work here, the amazing stuff, the things we're all going to need when the zombies come, Mark Spagnuolo, where can they go to find more of what you're doing?
TheWoodWhisperer.com is where you get all the information you probably don't need about woodworking.
You might. I'm telling you, man, I need to brush up because seriously, I'm screwed if everything goes down. I'm out.
Yeah. Me too, though. I rely on power tools a lot. So
I had someone throw your name back in my face the other day.
Really?
When you were looking at the Geek Chic stuff, right?
Yeah, I kind of got into it with them on the floor at PAX because I would buy one immediately if I didn't have to wait 2 years for a table.
Yeah. Well, I think it's weird because they are making these really, you know, really high-end custom pieces, which is difficult to put into production mode, but that's what they're trying to do. They're selling themselves as this, you know, bigger company who can get the product out
there.
That was my
question to you, and maybe it's for an after-show discussion, but I really wanted to pick your brain about that.
All right.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Keep that brain handy because we're about to get there. Oh, by the way, here's a quote. This is in the future when Scott Kurtz sees the zombies coming.
Huh?
And then that's the end
of
it all. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. ComicDorks.com is the website. Email us, comicdorks@gmail.com. We'd appreciate that. On Twitter, @comicdorks. You can find our t-shirt at /loot.com. More shows like this at comicdorks.com and frogpants.com. That's going to do it. We'll see you guys next time.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.